This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Neil Conan is on vacation. In the pop culture universe of TV shows like Friends and Sex and the City, single life is a half-glamorous, half-desperate mix of hanging with friends, obsessing over work, and agonizing about the future. But census figures show that in real life, it's a rapidly growing part of the population. Much of the attention directed at singles is focused on getting them unsingle. Online dating services are booming, but it can be a long journey between the U-Haul from mom and dad's house to the walk down the aisle. In between, singles leave their mark on cities, social structures, and the economy. Today, our series on family looks at the single life and a new kind of family that singles create, urban tribes. Are you single? What's your support network? What special challenges do you face? And what special skills do you need to survive the solo life? Join the conversation. Our number here in Washington, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Or send us an email at totn@npr.org. Joining us now from her home in Providence, Rhode Island, is Frances Goldscheider, a sociology professor at Brown University. She studies who we're living with and what that means for society. Thanks for being with us, Professor Goldscheider.
My pleasure, Lynn. Just call me Fran.
All right, Fran. Let's start with the numbers. How many Americans are living alone, according to the last census?
Well, it depends on how you cut it. I mean, obviously, none of the married, or almost none of the married, are living alone. I think an important way to think about it is that until about the 1950s, almost no young adults lived separately from their parents before they got married. And starting, really, I guess, in the 60s and 70s, sort of concomitant with the enormous increase in age at marriage, which has gone up for women from something like 20 to something like 26 and a half, it's created a whole new life course piece, essentially, where you're, on the one hand, an adult, but on the other hand, not in what used to be the traditional adult roles for men and women of being spouses and parents. And that gives you options and perhaps, as our TV shows show us, a lot of uncertainty about where you should be. Some concerns are that too many of them are living with their parents. There's a lot of this kind of, I don't know, stuff in the media. Isn't it awful that you see 23-year-olds and 25-year-olds and 27-year-olds living with their parents? How could they possibly be grown up? Whereas it's okay somehow to be single, because that's a new way of being grown up.
How did this phenomenon, you said this started in the, I guess, the early 60s, perhaps, up into the 70s, that people started choosing not to get married, perhaps, or delaying marriage. What are the reasons behind the beginning of that?
Well, that's actually one of the biggest arguments in my field. There's some who focus on women. They're so independent. They get so choosy. They can make a lot of money. Why should they get married and be good wives and mothers? There's the other side that focuses on men and says, oh, isn't it terrible? You know, either they have too much testosterone or else they're not very helpful around the house, or, God forbid, they haven't got a good, steady job. So that's why should women want to marry them? And, you know, between these two arguments, sort of taking a third tack, is the whole question of the gender revolution, which means that it's not quite clear who, if we're women, we want to attract, who we think we should be, you know, signaling to. There's a lot of confusion out there, I would have to say, in the dating market or the partner market, that, you know, women on the one hand want a good provider in the traditional sense, but they also want a, you know, caring, nurturing, communicating, and all of the new modern things that guys are supposed to be. And most guys at this point expect their wives to work full-time and contribute in a substantial way to the family income, but you know, they still would like to find dinner on the table. So that's leading to confusion in the partner market, too.
Is this a phenomenon? We're talking about being single, but as if this is a phenomenon only of the young, and it's not, is it?
Well, it's dramatically the young. Most people do eventually get married, though it looks as if there will be an increasing proportion who will not. This has gone up and down over time, and it's hard to know what people who were in their 20s in the 80s will finally end up doing, because we sort of have to wait until they do it. Are they just delaying? Are they somehow setting themselves on a schedule that says, I'm never going to marry. And, of course, there's a lot of, what shall we say, repartnering of various kinds with cohabitation and, you know, serious dating relationships that come and go. As we have learned more of the 50 ways to leave our lovers, we turn over quickly.
We're talking about living the single life on Talk of the Nation. The number is 800-989-8255. Let's go to a call from Beth in California. Hi, Beth. Oh, sorry about that. I disconnected Beth. That was my fault entirely. One other thing, it seems to like this is an urban phenomenon, being single.
Well, it's really hard to be single in a very small town because there's a lot more. The smaller the town, the more social life revolves around families and couples. And in larger towns, there are more interesting things to do. And that's led to some somewhat, you know, painful patterns where, say, guys in small areas who are involved perhaps in agricultural-related activities, if not farmers themselves, have invested in, you know, the local economy. They find that there are no partners because the women have moved to the cities where there's more interesting things to do. And so they are desperate. They have a lot of ads. I've been studying in Sweden, and there the Swedish rural guys are trying to import Polish brides, the idea being that the women can get a better life by coming to Sweden and are willing to settle for less than the Swedish women are. And there's something like that in the U.S. when we talk about Asian brides and other such patterns.
Well, thanks so much for being with us today, Fran.
It was my pleasure.
Frances Goldscheider is a professor of sociology at Brown University. She joined us from her home in Providence, Rhode Island. Joining us now from member station KQED in San Francisco is Ethan Waters, author of the new book Urban Tribes, A Generation Redefines Friendship, Family, and Commitment. Thanks for being with us, Ethan.
Thank you very much for having me.
What's the generation you're talking about? Is this Generation X?
This would be Generation X. I'm actually right on the cusp of I'm either the last baby boomer or the first Gen Xer. But it's you know, people of marrying age. It's basically I'm talking about the people that are in that group that have delayed marriage so long.
Why are people of your generation putting off marriage? Is it by choice or is it just because they can't find somebody?
You know, it's a very interesting question. I think there's a couple of factors. And as the previous guest said, there's a lot of disagreement over why this is happening. Some people point to just the longer education that's required for more complex jobs, and the fact that in the job market you go out into a job and it takes a while for you to establish yourself, whereas in previous generations maybe that wasn't as true. And another interesting change, I think, is that my generation is what they call soulmate searching, which is they have much higher expectation, it appears, for what happens in a marriage. Whereas previous generations, I think people have long been romantic about marriage. I think they also thought of it as a contract and a partnership with a sort of a quid pro quo that was that had a lot to do with things outside of romance. Now, I do think it's true that women, now that they can support themselves and have their own careers, and now they're looking for marriage as being that soulmate. And I think one of the problems is who knows what a soulmate is. It's very difficult to know it when you see it. But I think we're waiting longer to find that perfect person, and maybe potentially even having standards that are unrealistically high.
All right, we're talking about the single life and urban tribes with Ethan Waters. He's the author of the new book, Urban Tribes, A Generation Redefines Friendship, Family, and Commitment. Give us a call at 1-800-989-8255. Are you single? Do you like being single? And are you a member of an urban tribe? Let's go to Debbie. She's in Palo Alto, California. Hi, Debbie.
Yeah, we developed a tribe like that, especially in medicine, in the mid-80s, and, you know, most of the people that were in that group are now gone. I mean, they're all married and so on and so forth, and when you're the only one left behind, it's really an issue.
Did you get married, or have you remained single?
I've remained single, and it's sort of a choice, and it's not a choice. I mean, I'm not just going to get married to some friends that I have because I'm lonely. I choose to stay single until I find that person that, you know, maybe my standards are high, maybe they're not, but they are my standards, and I think they are for the right reason.
Well, Ethan Waters, it's an interesting point that Debbie's raising. You, of course, have written about this idea of urban tribes, which is people who are sort of the support network, I guess, around single people. But what happens when someone gets left behind?
It's a very interesting question. And not to give away the ending of my book, which is part memoir, but I got married in the fall. So my life is undergoing the sort of transition. And I'm asking myself that question. What happens to this wonderful group once people start pairing up? And
can I make another comment?
Sure.
It's that I find that the people that once they do get married, it's almost like they don't want to have anything to do with you. And it's sad because once you were really the best of friends.
That is a very sad story. But I don't think it necessarily has to be that way. I think certainly one thing that happened to me as I sort of refocused my life over the last year and made the us in my life from meaning my group of friends to meaning my wife and I. I think it's very easy for feelings to get hurt on both sides, and people can send unintentional signals that say that the other person receives as I don't want to be your friend anymore, when in fact their life simply is undergoing a transition that they would love to have your support for.
All right. Thanks for your call, Debbie. We've got a little ahead of ourselves here, I think, Ethan, in that we haven't really defined what we mean, what you mean by urban tribes. You kind of coined
Sure.
that phrase, and maybe you can describe what you mean by that.
Absolutely. Can I say one thing about the book also? It actually is not out yet. It comes out in October.
Okay.
So I hope people will remember it when it comes out. But, the idea is an urban tribe is basically a group of friends that becomes sort of the central support mechanism for people during this marriage delay. So you have a huge population of people who have gone from college to living in a city or a college town destination, post-college town destination, and they have they arrive with a sort of a loose network of friends that are, some are from their workplace, some are from their roommate situation, some are from college. And I think the critical element then is time. You add 5 or 10 years to that loose network of friends, and what you'll find is something else sort of evolves. You find that these groups tend to become very, very highly what social scientists called clustered. That is, it's not just focused around one set of people, but all the people within this group have a legitimate friendship or relationship with all the other people in the group. People tend to take on roles that fit their personalities within tribes. There's the problem solver, and then there's the therapist, and then there's the person to go to when you're in trouble. And these groups also tend to sort of develop rituals over time.
Why is it a tribe as opposed to just a gang of friends?
Well, I think primarily because I think over time the tribe establishes sort of through the rituals that they have and the routine events, the tribe establishes a story about the tribe, so that the idea of the group transcends the individual members. And in fact, what I discovered after writing the article about it, as I wrote about the book, started writing the book, was that I sort of lost my train of thought there, but the membership can change over time, but the idea of the group gets retained in the story of the group, so that the group can go on for years and years and years, and the membership can fundamentally change over time, which is something I didn't really expect.
Hmm.
But it can still sort of appear to be the same group, in the same way a sports team might sort of seem like the same group, the Yankees, one year as they were 5 years ago, but they're actually different members with the same story.
Stay with us, Ethan. We're going to continue this discussion when we return. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. We're talking about the single life today. Our guest is Ethan Waters, author of Urban Tribes. Join the discussion. Do you belong to an urban tribe? What defines its boundaries? Give us a call at 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Ethan, we were talking about what makes a group of friends a tribe, but we have to talk about the other part of that title, urban. This whole phenomenon of singleness, it just seems seems like more singles congregate in urban areas or cities. Why is that?
Oh, that's absolutely true. I mean, the statistics are clear. In small towns, people tend to get married younger. I've searched long and hard in the Census Bureau for a statistic that tells me what the average age of marriage is in urban populations. And unfortunately, I can't exactly find it. But my sense is that whereas the average marrying age in the country is around 28 or upwards of 27 for men and I think 26 for women, that if you tracked college-educated people that move to urban centers, you'd find it being much or significantly higher, perhaps even into the low 30s.
All right, let's take a call now from Cindy in St. Louis, Missouri. Hi, Cindy.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
I'm 32 and I'm single, and I actually do live in an urban area, obviously, and I have a master's degree, which I do think contributed, I guess, partly to why I'm still single, because I worked and went to undergrad and grad. But I think one of the reasons that at least I'm still single is that I'm one of, I guess, the first generations of children to have parents who are divorced. So I really think that a lot of us really want to make sure that the one we do pick is going to last for a long time, because we don't want to go through what our parents went through.
Would you say that's a pretty common response, Ethan, from what you know?
Absolutely. I've heard a lot of people say that. They say, we've been burned by divorce already in our childhood. And we're going to wait for the right person. I have some, the good news for Cindy and people like her is that the statistics are already showing that these later marriages tend to be stronger marriages. They tend to last longer and be happier marriages. So there is some positive effect of becoming a sort of full-fledged adult before you hook up and share your life with someone else.
All right. Thanks for your call, Cindy. Let's go now to Bonnie. She's in Denver, Colorado. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi, this is Bonnie.
Hi, go ahead.
Hi, I have more of a comment, I guess, than a question. One of the things about the urban tribe phenomena, I am 44, master's degree. I was married when I was very young, 20 years ago, and I'm now currently single. And one thing that I don't hear being addressed are those of us who are in our 30s and 40s who are very happy being single. I have a group of friends that are both single and married. I'm not actively in any dating service. I certainly would be interested in meeting someone, but it's not the primary goal of my single life. I'm very happy single, and I would just like the author's comments on that group of people, and I'll take the answer off the air.
Thanks so much for calling, Bonnie, and it's a really good point, Ethan. I was going to ask you about that. I mean, there seems to be an underlying assumption that, from what you're saying, that everybody wants to get married eventually.
Well, I think that a large portion of people do want to get, that is true that people want to get married eventually. Even, Bonnie, who is very happy being single, thinks that maybe it would be nice if there was a partner out there for her. So I think that is true. But certainly, my focusing on the urban tribe is to make the case that the single years are full of emotional and social support in a way that maybe we haven't even fully discovered yet. And indeed, given that we're the generation that's delayed marriage the longest, it's very likely that we'll be the generation that has the most people that stay single for their entire lives. And I imagine, or alternatively, people, get married and get divorced, and that there will be people throughout all stages of life that are in need of social groups. And the urban tribe phenomenon is particular to the young, never-married demographic, solely because there's so many of them. Certainly, at any time of your life, you find yourself single and in need of social support, and you find a set of friends that are in the same situation. I think forming this sort of social group is the most natural thing we do. It's not specific to the younger demographic, and it's achievable for anyone in that sort of situation, whenever however old they are.
All right, let's go to Paige in Kansas City, Missouri. Hi, Paige.
Hello, I am a member of a classic urban tribe.
What makes it a classic urban tribe?
Well, pretty much everything that you guys have been talking about. Mm-hmm. We range in age from mid-20s to mid-30s. All of us are single. The most attached any of us are, there's a couple of us that cohabitate, and it's we have a joint bank account, a loft, and a dog. What else is there? So that's always been nice. However, one of our members has recently announced that she's getting married, And instead of being so thrilled and happy and, oh, yay, you're going to be married, this will be great, it was kind of, oh, you're leaving us? What? You know, and it was kind of a sense of disappointment of we wanted to still be the main group of her life, and, you know, she'd kind of moved on without us. And
is she getting married to someone within the group or from without?
No, actually, she's not. She recently moved, ironically enough, to a smaller community and met a guy and, you know, as we say, knew him for 20 minutes and announced that they were getting married. So
she had to go to a small town to find her mate, huh?
It was bizarre. We were like, wow, you moved to Des Moines, and all of a sudden she meets somebody. So
there's a little bit of what it's anger or, I mean,
no,
is it, or jealousy,
no,
or what is
absolutely
it?
Absolutely not anger. Maybe a little bit of jealousy of, oh, come on, no, we don't do that. We don't get married in this group. We're young and we stay single, and, you know, we do it our own way. We don't have to be like our parents. So I think it's kind of like that. Ironically enough, also, we all come from very stable homes. I heard the woman saying before that, you know, we all, you know, perhaps it's a reflection of divorced parents and things. We all come from parents who are still together long-term marriages. So I just thought that was an interesting point to bring up.
All right. Thanks so much for your call, Paige. And I know, Ethan, you were saying earlier that you recently got married. How did your tribe react to it?
Well, there were some similar issues. I got married to a person outside the group. And I have to say, out of all the stories I've been told about tribes across the country, this one is sort of the number one negative story in tribes. When someone goes off and finds a partner and suddenly looks like they are separating themselves from the group and going off on their own, boy, it brings up a huge bunch of emotions of jealousy, of being left behind, of wondering, people still in the tribe wondering when they're going to, if they're ever going to find a partner. And the tribe can react to that set of circumstances in a way that can be alarming. You know, they can really become kind of sometimes vicious, especially if they think, for whatever set of reasons, that the person is not right for them, or that the courtship was too short, it sounds like, maybe in this case. And the group can literally act as a group to try to dissuade the person from that. And actually, you know, this all brings up, going back to that first question of why the marriage delay has gone on so long, this actually could be one of the reasons. The life in the tribe has its own momentum. And once you have that sort of uniquely supportive group of people that, you know, you can be counted on, it's very hard to sort of bring a romantic person in and have them replace that safe social support. So your tribe life tends to have a little momentum that's hard to shift, even if you were to come across the right person.
All right, let's take another call. We got a call from Jen, and she's in Raleigh, North Carolina. Hi, Jen.
Hello there. This has been a real scary discussion because I was a member of a tribe, I guess, in Washington, and have actually stayed very much a part of the tribe and have a bit of a different experience than the other young lady that just called. Still a part of the tribe. I'm actually the one who's recently married, and various people have gone off and gotten married throughout the process, or I guess throughout our growth as a tribe, but we've managed to stay supportive of each other, and that's been very nice, and again, very unlike, I think, other situations you've encountered doing your research, and it sounds like other situations other people have encountered. But the one thing I don't think that's been touched upon that scares me a bit about the tribe is the insecurity both on male and female parts of finding a mate ever. And that scares me a bit, the fact that here we are living these incredibly independent lives and have our, you know, pay our bills and get things done and are moving on in our careers, but are so obsessed with finding a mate.
Ethan?
Oh, I think that's not particular to the urban tribes. I think the marriage delay has caused a lot of anxiety. I mean, I don't know if this helps relieve anyone's anxiety, but the people that study this these phenomenon believe that you know, the vast majority of people will still get married. The baby boom generation, our parents' generation, actually got married at a rate much larger, faster than any generation in American history. They got married younger, and more of them got married. So we'll likely go back to the sort of percentage, I think it's in the middle 90s, of 90%, 95% of people getting married that existed prior to our parents' generation. But that's still, you know, that's most everyone. And there's actually another bit of good news here that I just recently read has to do with educated women, it used to be that the more education a woman had, the more likely she was to be in the never married or group. And that seems to, the statistic seems to be closing in such a way that is, it's now more like, it's getting more and more likely that the more educated woman is going to be the one that gets married, and the less educated woman is more and more likely to be the one that does not get married. And those that gap is closing in such a way that the people that study this believe that it'll actually overlap, and it'll soon be, marriage will more and more become the province of more and more educated women. That the more educated you are, the more likely you are to find a mate.
All right, let's take a call from Nestor in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi, Nestor.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Good. My phone might die.
Well, hurry up.
I just started getting the beeps. Yeah. Okay, I am a part of a tribe. We actually call ourselves the tribe. We've actually known each other for about 14 years and have just gone into the point over the last several years of marrying off. It has not affected our social interaction with one another, although some of us have gone through divorces. Everybody still remains friends. We actually married one another. We performed the ceremonies ourselves and just had the certificates notarized. So I wonder what the guest thinks about the notion that some of these tribes form up because of a rejection of traditional avenues for fellowship.
Wait, hold on a second. You married one another, like one-on-one you married one another, or you all?
Yeah, but also like when my two friends got married, I performed the ceremony.
Oh.
And, you know, we're all educated people. We're nurses and doctors and everything and teachers. But we just sort of went away from the notion of a church marrying us or the government marrying us. I mean, we are married officially through, you know, our certificates are notarized. We're legally married. But we performed the ceremonies ourselves.
All right, I'm going to let you rest that phone of yours, and I'm going to see if Ethan can respond to this interesting story. Ethan, is this a new one on you? Or?
Not at all. My marriage was done by a member of my tribe. The ceremony was performed by a member of my tribe, and the music was performed by members of my tribe. So I think a lot of people do understand that this is a central thing in their life. And he says, he asked whether it was a rejection of traditional methods of fellowship, and I think you could expand that question and look at, say, for instance, Robert Putnam's book, called Bowling Alone, which made the case that my generation was really uniquely disconnected from forms of community building. We weren't joining the Lions Clubs or the League of Women Voters or the various community organizations our parents and grandparents joined. And I think, and it's very true, and it's a distressing case, but I think if you begin to look not only with what we give to these tribes socially, but how these tribes interact with each other in the sort of the social landscape of the city, I think you can begin to make the case that there is a good deal of community building that goes on within these tribes. You look at events like Burning Man or the critical mass bicycle protests, and I think what you begin to see is small groups of friends functioning in for a larger purpose within a larger a larger event or community, and I think you could begin to build the case that these groups are our way not only of keeping ourselves sane in the city but building community as well.
All right. Well, thanks for being with us today, Ethan.
Thank you for having me.
Ethan Waters is the author of Urban Tribes, A Generation Redefines Friendship, Family, and Commitment. He joined us from the studios of member station KQED in San Francisco. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.